Terrific, thanks. And our next speaker is Joe Calafiore, who is Chief Executive Officer of the Transport and Accident Commission in TAC in Victoria, and comes to that job with lots of communications and policy experience from a range of government roles. He entered TAC as the Director of Community Relations, and before that he was a Senior Advisor to the Victorian Minister for Police, which included transport, major projects, finance, including WorkSafe and the TAC and industrial relations. Please welcome Joe Calafiore.
Thanks very much, Norman, and also thank you to the Actuaries Institute for the invitation to present today. I'd also like to take this opportunity to acknowledge the traditional owners of this land and pay my respect to their elders past and present. Thinking about the theme today about change, challenges and opportunity, and I suppose I've got some very consistent themes about our previous speakers this morning. I'm just glancing for my clicker here, actually. If I can maybe click to the next slide going forward. I've got a missing clicker here, so Johnny, you've pinched it off me. Thanks, John. Ambition, particularly for those such as the TAC in Victoria that are statutory monopolies. So I suppose at a very macro level, I believe one of the great challenges we have for those that work in what we call the social insurance industry is to ensure that we keep injecting ambition into what we can achieve for our clients. So if I start from the prevention part of our business at the TAC, for those that are Victorian in the room, a famous 1970 campaign, Sun Pictorial, the then media outlet, declare war on 1034. So that's when that year in Victoria where the road toll clicks over 1,000. And if you had have said in 1970, what we're going to do over the next 45 years is add 3 million motorists to the road network, 700,000 motorbike riders, scores, hundreds and thousands of pedestrians, and a road toll is going to go from 1034 to 250, that would have been considered utter lunacy. Flat earth stuff. But yet, over the decades, for various policy reasons, that's the performance. So a couple of years ago in Victoria, after years of gain upon gain, we really start to flatline in terms of our prevention performance. And we're very data rich at the TAC. We speak to 70 real people every single week. Focus group, 70 people have done it for years. And when we'd ask that question, what do you think of the road toll is in Victoria? People started to say things like, it's pretty good. It used to be pretty bad. It's amazing how many people can recall that famous Sun Pictorial campaign. It used to be really shocking. Now it's pretty good. It's 200, it's 300, it's 400. And obviously when we say, what should it be for your family? The answer is obviously zero. So we call this is a really deliberate big target strategy. So last year, with the support of the Victorian Government and our road safety partners, we actually put up in lights towards zero. You know, the best experts in this field speak about 2055. You know, decades playing a really long game about it is not an unrealistic statement to speak about the elimination of road trauma in Victoria. No sooner did we put the towards zero up in lights, our road toll last year shot from 250 to 290. So under that word of challenge, can I say, to keep the support and the credibility of what I diplomatically refer the authorising environment, has been an enormous challenge on behalf of the TAC and our partner agencies. And before I move on to mission, there's one of the TAC actuaries in the room today, Rod Peel. That's where I think actuaries have a really important role to play in road safety, actually. I got Rod to model for me a few years ago. What would the TAC's claim experience be like if the crash history looks like 89 or 99? You know, how many hundreds and thousands of people have been prevented, so injuries, fatalities, before we even get to the economic savings? So it's one of those gold little charts I still have in my bottom drawer as a shield. So, happy to discuss later in the plenary session. Our mission to be the world's leading social insurer, and here I've got to pay tribute to, I think, Dr. Andrew Fronsko's in the room here today. So as a statutory monopoly a few years ago, when we were launching our new strategy, we thought about, well, how ambitious are we going to be for our clients? And there's two comments I'd like to make about that statement. And the first one is, that's not a marketing slogan. So this is not some chest-beating exercise about winning trophies, because as a monopoly, what would be the point? Not trying to pinch market share off others. The second comment, and once again pay tribute to Andrew here, is this is not about a league table approach to thinking where we say we're 13th in return to work and we really love to be 11th or 7th and 5th. And Andrew's really helped our organisation get to actually a leading organisation's a learning organisation. So that's why it's wonderful to participate in forums such as this. What are other organisations doing in the health outcome space, in the prevention space, in the mental injury space that we can learn as an organisation? Because that's the ambition that we have for our clients. If our kids wanted to be a tennis player, we'd say, why can't you win Wimbledon? Why not? So Australians naturally have an inclination towards actually win the Nobel Prize. You can lead the field in the world. So when we think about research that says actually compensable clients have inferior outcomes, something's drastically wrong in terms of the systems that we work in. So we want to lead the world in social insurance, and you start by learning. To pick it really up on David Bowen's wonderful address early this morning, these challenges, I think the second one's not particularly new, but let me start a little bit with the first one. So not unlike a lot of schemes, our history is market failure. So our predecessors went broke. And when that happens, it's undeniable that that has a really important impact on the culture of your organisation. So we hardwire into the DNA of our culture, don't go broke. Success is don't go broke. And fair enough, given that there'd been blood on the streets for many, many years to come. So one of our great challenges that we face as an organisation now is to make that subtle shift. When we speak to staff who say, my job is to protect the scheme, I often say, from who? From the public who own it. To custodians of the scheme. And this to me is very much not about, so you used to be hard and now we're soft. Health outcomes is actually good for the person, good for the schemes and good for the society, the true virtuous circle. But from protectors to custodians is a cultural shift that we're in the process of trying to make as an organisation. And from happy client to healthy client. So we spend the first 15 years of our history with a hard, you know, actuarial release target, you know, for the actuaries in the room. And I'd argue that that headline corporate measure served us very well, because it injected the financial discipline into our processes and into our thinking. However, led by our Chief Strategy Officer, David Gifford, an actuary by trade, we decided a couple of years ago, actually, sitting on top of $13 billion, saying we're 20 million up or 20 million down as our reason for being a headline measure of success wasn't ambitious enough for clients. And as I said, decades of research, decades of literature on the topic, but actually how we operationalise this now. So with the support of boards, ministers, governments, the 17 bosses that we've got, we took actuarial release off as our headline corporate KPI and have replaced it with a hard health outcomes measure, which in my view was not just a symbolic shift about the change, but an actual practical shift. It's actually, we're going to run this business differently. And importantly, not just about our version of health outcome, which is scheme participation and what you'd call your traditional insurance metrics, but the direct voice of the clients. So if our clients tell us they're not getting better, they're not getting better. And that means we're not succeeding. The other point that I'd like to make before I move on from that chart is it's very much a challenge as our mindset as the funder. So traditionally, because we're paying all the bills, we at the TAC have liked to think that we're really important. There's the client and then there's the TAC. And of course, through years and years of research, we discover probably what's a really obvious point. We're really down the chain. Now, who's the most important person in your recovery? Family, doctor, clinical, GPs. So when you're the funder and you're paying the bills and you see yourself down at seventh, it's a bit of a wake-up call. So it's actually not all about us. So in a world of health outcomes, the great challenge for an organisation such as ourselves is actually most of these things are not within our direct span of control. So how do we influence the trauma system? How do we influence the processes and procedures of our physios and our attending care agencies? How do we position ourselves in an industry in the disability sector with the great changes of the NDIS? So from happy client to healthy client, it rolls off the tongue. But the two most, I suppose, strategic questions that we ask ourselves is, so we have to identify need. And the chart that John just flashed up about the claim segmentation, ours actually looks pretty similar, an 80%, a 19%, and a 1%. 80% of our clients really just want us to get out of the way. 1% our lifetime clients, and what we call our supported recovery cohort, that 19% in the middle. Chronic pain, mental health, throwing a common law claim, throwing cultural issues. It's complex, and the one thing that we do know is we can't fix it on our own at the TAC. So how do we identify needs that shift over time, and then how do we tailor a response that often won't be the TAC delivering that response, is the great, what I'd call, thorny strategic challenge that we're wrestling with. But you have some upsides in this job as CEO. You get to the point to your chief strategy officer and say, just fix that, would you? So David's going to speak later at this conference about those challenges. I just thought, in the interest of time, I'd just give a couple of practical examples. So it's one thing to think about the theoretical challenge. So what are some of the things that we're actually doing to address this challenge? So residential independent property. So this is a conversation that started years ago at the TAC, which is, for many of our independence clients, as everyone in this room would well know, a complete shortage of appropriate and affordable housing. And while the last thing that we wanted to do at the TAC is get up in the morning and say, let's be property developers, the reality was we saw a case of market failure. So $30 million originally, now into $40 million, where we've actually constructed direct housing, disability housing for our clients. So, and there's going to be more of this as we observe the market on the way through. So, and if I think of the change in mindset of how we used to position this initiative years ago to how it is today, you know, in the probably year 2009, 2010, the narrative would have been something like attendant care, our biggest liability. If we can get some attendant care savings, we'll get our actuary release, good for the scheme, versus now saying, actually, let's try and model this on a neutral outcome. This is about health outcomes. So what hope have you got of a positive client outcome if you don't have that basic need of housing, if you can't cook, if you can't access public transport, if you can't access your community? And what do you know? A few years in, and in aggregate, obviously, because individual circumstances change, but in aggregate, better client outcomes, better return to work rates, better participation in society. So it gives me sort of some green shoots of hope that all of that literature and learning about better health outcomes, and yes, the outflow is better balance sheet, actually not while we're doing it though. So Ripple to me is a nice, what I call, practical, live, actual case study of something that stretched our thinking of our role in terms of what we see as a social insurer, but it's paying really positive dividends early on. And the fault part of our business, common law. So the TAC, when I sort of think of, you know, the TAC, traditionally we've thought of the no-fault component of our scheme, and that's what I call the friendly, empathetic TAC. You know, quick claim lodgement, we're here to help, what do you need? And then the common law part of our scheme, our second biggest liability, and I've sat in many a workshop and a board meeting over the last decade, and the language is about granting rates, lodgements, trends, and these types of things. And that's fair enough, because this can blow our scheme up. However, we've learnt the hard way that going in there to lobby government about thresholds and changes and these types of things, no sooner is the legislation hit the floor of the parliament, that the media release about the repeal of the law comes out. So we decided a couple of years ago, maybe let's take a different approach. Is it possible to design a common law at-fault process that actually doesn't harm the client? As previous speakers have said, what a perverse outcome for a first world country such as Australia to have a financial system that's delivering harm. The other comment that I'd make here is, up until this point in our history, we take a completely reactive approach. So we accept claims, we ask a lot of questions, and we actually mark on our files common law potential. And what do you know, in four years' time and 5 years' time, we tend to be right. So apart from being completely reactive and saying common law potential, in an age of data analytics, in an age of where we've got decades of expertise and judgment, is there a way of designing a system that is proactive, that delivers for the client, that doesn't create honeypots, that doesn't put the financial sustainability of the scheme at risk? That's just, that's a shot of, we had 25 clients in a room about 3 months ago that had been through the TAC common law process. And, you know, the words, you know, co-design with the clients, you know, they get a bit fatty in this day and age. And it was one of those ones where I thought, I'll pop my head in half an hour, thinking that I've heard a lot about this. And 3 hours later, we've got TAC staff members in tears. because you're hearing the voice of the client. You're hearing people say things like, I've spent the last 4 years of my life at a barbecue saying how much I hate the TAC and how much I hate you people. And I didn't realise you weren't evil. And you've got, you know, me and my people, passionate, talented staff saying we're just really doing our very best in a system that's pretty ordinary. So humbling, exhausting, but also leaves you with a little bit of optimism, actually, about it's not all about legislative change or regulatory change. So much of our approach to common law is actually within our control. So we believe there's going to be a better way. And just very quickly, and I end up, it's an actuaries conference, so I appreciate over the next couple of days there'll be lots of sessions with charts and numbers and graphs and the like. So I just thought I'd flash up something a bit different. Every single company speaks of values, and values to me, different companies that I've worked at, tend to be statements of the bleedingly obvious. They say things like accountability, innovation, transparency, standard things. So at the TAC a couple of years ago, we built these with our staff, which are, what are we going to stand for in this debate? So we're known on the back of our brand as a road safety organisation. It's actually 15 people out of the 800 that work for us. So We Value Life is really trying to encapsulate prevention. It's trying to encapsulate our staff, which is, this is really emotionally and complex and draining work. And we have to be more sophisticated in the way we look after our workforce. And I've got to pay tribute to Claire Amies and her wonderful WorkSafe staff. We're very fortunate to have them across the road in Geelong, actually, that have built a really mature OH&S system for our people. And We Value Life, ultimately, a statement of what we want for our clients. Just because you've had an accident, just because you were driving to work and someone hit you, does not mean that you're not entitled to live a life of dignity. So we value life. We make every conversation count. And you know, when you do these staff workshops and you say, tell us what's good about what working for our company and not so good, I'd made the mistake of thinking actually people will gloss and give you the good and they'll pull their punches on the negative. And I'll tell you, at the TAC, that was my opposite experience. And a few years ago, we had some staff members saying things like, we say we value innovation, but we don't. We value risk aversion. We don't want to be on the front page having paid something that we shouldn't. Now, we say we're edgy and bold and we're courageous, but we're not. So we make every conversation count. Once again, a deliberate play on our part to say, actually, let's cut through the crap. With ourselves, you've got to be respectful, but being respectful doesn't have to mean being agreeable. It also means you have to be a little bit gutsy. So I winced a little bit when John spoke of the 13-page letter that went to one of his staff members. I winced because that would be similar to the TAC experience when our staff members have a transport accident. So let's make every conversation count. Our industry, the customer's not always right, unfortunately. So how do we manage expectations? How do you guide as opposed to decide for people? So we try and hold ourselves to that account, but we also try and hold our partners and our stakeholders to that account, which is, if there's a problem, tell us. And if we've made a mistake, we'll fix it. And if we believe we have a difference of opinion, then we'll say that too. I won't labour them all. And lastly, making the complicated system. I mean, people that work in this industry every single day find these systems and processes complex, because they are. So an enormous challenge, an enormous opportunity, but lastly, I would say an enormous privilege to be able to work in an industry where we're going to improve the lives of many. Thank you.